Welcome to season 5 of Swiss Impact with Benedikt. I'm Sveta.
And I am Ben. The topic of season 5 is impactful investments. How can you make a difference with your capital?
Our guests, who are managing impact investment funds, business owners, thought leaders, will empower you to invest with impact.
In this season, we will showcase various impact investment funds who are contributing to SDGs, better known as Sustainable Development Goals, as defined by the United Nations.
There is no excuse. Shift your capital to create positive change in our world. Your children will be happier, you will feel fulfilled, and make money.
We will broadcast every Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. Central European Time, here on Swiss Impact with Banerjee. You get more when you give back.
So always invest with impact.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone from around the world.
Welcome back to our episode 8, season 5, dedicated to impactful investment opportunities.
And great to see you all again so soon. Just a few days back, I had the privilege of participating in a meeting between an entrepreneur and one of the guests from our TV show and an investor. And the best part was that the investor thanked me after this for finding this project for him, which he found from the TV.
Wow, yeah, it's really fantastic that we hear pitches of such amazing businesses and projects which are having tremendous positive impact on our environment and societies. And best is that some of these companies did not even see themselves as impactful businesses, and those were not aware that they can have access to funding from institutional and private impact investors, just like you out there, our dearest audience. Last week, both Ben and I was actually invited as speakers at the Global Impact Investing Summit and shared our practical insights with global audience. You can watch the recording on our social media of this event. It's really inspiring, and learn more about various impact investing topics which were discussed there.
And indeed, watch also our program on many channels on Smart TV, social media like LinkedIn, Facebook, and you can watch on the YouTube. You just have to subscribe at youtube.com/Swiss Impact. Or you can as well listen on the Spotify. And remember to share our program with your friends and family, whoever is interested to learn or invest into our amazing and fastest growing sector of impact and sustainable investments.
Great. So today's show is actually about nature. To say more, nature is the most important stakeholder. But before we invite our inspiring guest, I'd like to ask you, Ben, to share your story.
So it seems that Europe is finally waking up and planning to go to the right direction, as I was hoping since Russia decided to invade Ukraine. So last month, many of you may not be aware, the EU Commission presented RePower EU plan in response to the issues generated by the Russian invasion. By acting as one, Europe can phase out its dependence on Russian fossil fuel. The way to do it, through energy saving, diversification of energy supplies, and accelerated rollout of renewable energies to replace fossil fuel at home, industry, and power generation. And this, in my opinion, this green transformation will not only strengthen economic growth, energy security, and fulfill the climate action pledges of Europe, and not only Europe, its partners, because this plan will not only impact EU members, but also the surrounding countries and countries which are trading with EU to work together more directly and indirectly. So we should really work at supporting EU Commission with this, because we should not forget that the friends of Putin, like Orban of Hungary, and the mighty fossil fuel lobby, the German industry, which is addicted to cheap Russian fossil fuel, will try to block or delay. especially the rollout of renewable energy. For these actions, I would like to quote someone whom I have the privilege of personally knowing, and I admire him also very much. That's Vice President Al Gore. When he said something like, these actions are the moral equivalent of a war crime.
Right, so it seems there is hope for all who is involved and suffering at the moment from Russian and Ukrainian side, that the peace will triumph in Europe, which I truly hope from all my heart. And with this, I'd like to invite our guest of today, who is again from your birth country, as you have several, and this time it is India. Mr. Satish Kumar, the founder of Schumacher College of the United Kingdom, please join us in our studio.
Welcome, Satish.
Hello, Satish. Welcome. How are you? Where are you right now?
It's my pleasure to be on your program. And I am in the UK, a county called Devon. And it's a beautiful summer here. And it's a great pleasure to be on your program.
Well, it's our honor to have you with us today. And I'd like quickly to introduce you to our audience, for those who don't know you yet. So you are a peace pilgrim, lifelong activist, TEDx speaker, and former monk. And not only you have inspired us, but you have inspired global change for over 50 years. You undertook a pilgrimage for peace, walking for 2 years without money from India to America for the cause of nuclear disarmament. And now, in your 80s, you look much younger though, you have devoted your life to campaigning for ecological regeneration and social justice. You're also world-renowned author of many books and international speaker, founder of the Resurgence Trust and editor for over 40 years of Resurgence and Ecologist magazine, which had been described as the artistic and spiritual flagship of the green movement. You also have received many awards in education, literature, and others. And I cannot list everything what you have done. It's better that you tell us yourself. So welcome, Satish. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Satish, I wanted to ask, I have so many questions, but I wanted to ask you first, what was this journey about, walking from India to US? And how was it in your experience?
Yes, it was in 1962. It was the height of Cold War. And at that time, the nuclear arms race was very much on the agenda. And all the countries like Soviet Union at that time, and the United States, France, England, they were all piling up the nuclear weapons. And I said, I must do something about this arms race. What can I do? I should go with my friend, two of us, to Moscow, Paris, London, and Washington, and urge people to disarm, particularly nuclear disarmament. But how do I go? I decided not to fly, because if you fly, there's no impact. But also I wanted to go to people, because it's the people who are going to really be the leaders of the peace that we want in the world. And so I decided to walk. And then I thought, wars begin in fear and peace begins in trust. So I want to show that I trust myself. I trust all people of all races, all religions, all countries, all background. And I trust the universe. And so I decided to go without any money in my pockets. That means I had to depend always on the hospitality and generosity of the strangers. So for 2.5 years, I walked more than 8,000 miles and without any money in my pocket. And I went to Moscow, I went to Paris, I went to London, I went to Washington, and I met representatives of the governments in the Kremlin, in the White House. I met Martin Luther King. I met ordinary people. I met industrial leaders, business leaders, so United Nations leaders. So that was my journey for 2.5 years.
Wow. And can you tell us before that? So where are you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in India, in the state of Rajasthan. And I grew up there in the deserts of Rajasthan. And at age 9, I decided to become a Jain monk. Because my father died when I was 4 years old. And I was very sad. And my mother was very sad. And my family was very sad that our father has died, or my father has died. And so I thought, is there any way of stopping people dying? And I was told that by renouncing the world, you can bring an end to the cycle of birth and death. So I said, I'll do anything to stop people dying. And so that was the reason that I became a Jain monk at the age of 9. And for 9 years, I was a monk walking bare feet, again, without any money, begging for my food and practicing complete non-violence. The Jain principle is the principle of non-violence. So that was my monk's life for 9 years.
Wow, that's impressive. I admire this, that also your mother could let you go. Or how did she experience these 9 years when you were away?
I mean, my mother was a very religious woman. Although she was very sad and she did not want to let me go, but she also did not want to be an obstacle on my religious journey and religious quest. Therefore, she had two sort of minds, a split mind. On the one hand, she wanted to encourage me to follow my calling and my religious aspiration. And on the other hand, she wanted to have me with her. However, her religious impact or impulse allowed her to give me her blessings. And so I had a I had a very wonderful mother. She was a very religious woman and she was a very ecological woman. She was a very great lover of nature and she was a great gardener and she loved honeybees and she loved trees. And she actually taught me when I was a little child to love nature. And so my mother was a wonderful person, but also as a Jain monk, I had to be non-violent, not only to people, but also non-violent to nature, non-violent to animals. All Jains are vegetarians. So love of nature and love of people was a very much part of the Jain tradition. And I was practicing that non-violence to people and non-violence to nature and doing no harm to animals or insects, or rivers, or oceans. That was the principle of Jain monk.
Right. I mean, we understand that social justice and nature are so important to you. So it is to us as well. So we practice ahimsa ourselves. And I wanted to ask you about your philosophy, which is based on three pillars, soil, soul, and society. Could you share more about it, please?
Yes. You know, all the great movements express their vision and their values in three words. Like the French Revolution had three words, égalité, liberté, and fraternité. The Christian tradition has Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. The Indians have Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. So always in three words, you encapsulate the essence of the movement. Now we are in the age of ecology. This is the age of nature. And our impact on nature is a very important question today. So how do we express our vision, our values, and our concern about nature and people? So I wanted to find a new trinity for our time. So this is my new trinity. Soil, soul, and society. I put soil at the top because everything comes from the soil and returns to the soil. And it must come from the soil and it must return to the soil. If we don't return things to soil, then it becomes greenhouse gases, it becomes pollution, it becomes waste. And so coming from the soil and returning everything back to the soil is the first ecological and environmental and a sustainability principle. And so, and everything we eat, all our food, fruits, vegetables, grain, herbs, comes from the soil. All our clothes come from the soil. All our wood with which we build our trees and furniture come from the soil. All these things are soil transformed. But at the moment, nobody cares about soil. We have become so obsessed with money and finance and capital, they have forgotten that our money and finance and capital are only means to an end. The end is the protection and the caring of the soil, of natural world, of our environment. So this is why I put soil at the top of my trinity. But soil has to be treated not as a kind of mechanical system. Soil and nature are not a machine. Soil and nature have a soul. Soil and nature have intelligence. They are living organisms. Earth is not a dead rock and nature is not a machine. But Earth is a living organism and nature is a living organism. So living organism is soul. And we also have a soul. And in our soul qualities, we cultivate compassion, kindness, generosity, love of nature, love of people, love of ourselves. And so these soul qualities of nature and soul qualities of humans have to be cultivated. And then society. We are divided, humanity today. In the name of religion, we fight. In the name of nationality, we have wars. In the name of race, we have discrimination. In the name of color, black, white, brown, we have discrimination. In the name of gender, we have discrimination. So I want to create a unity of our social harmony so that we are all human beings first and foremost. Before we are Hindus, Muslims, Christians, before we are Chinese, Russians, Americans, Europeans, Africans, before we are black, white, before we are educated, uneducated, we are human beings first. That is the principle of society. So this is why I have created this new trinity for our time, soil, soul, and society.
Wow. I don't know what to say. Coming to you also, in your CV we read, you also run a trust called Resurgence Trust. What is the purpose of it and why did you create it?
Resurgence Trust and also Resurgence and Ecologist Magazine and the Ecologist website. We have created this in order to promote the trinity of soil, soul, and society. Lots of people are single issue oriented. They just put one thing at the top, animal rights or human rights or end of racism or end of something. But we are saying in Resurgence Trust that everything is interrelated. Everything is interconnected. Nature, humans are interconnected. We cannot separate them. Lots of people think that nature is separate from humans. Nature is out there, the mountains, the forests, the rivers, the animals, the birds are nature. Humans are not nature. This is a mistaken view. Humans are also nature. We are nature. We are made of earth, air, fire, water. Same elements as the trees and the mountains and the animals are made of. They are also made of earth, air, fire, water. So the mission of Resurgence Trust is to bring this unity of life, to say humans are also nature. And therefore, what we do to nature, we do to ourselves. If we pollute water, we are 70% water. We have to drink that water. If we pollute the air, we have to breathe it. If we put greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, our climate will change and we will have a heating and we will have a climate catastrophe. If we pollute the rivers and the oceans, that is dangerous. If we pollute the soil, if we cut down the rainforest, that is dangerous. So what we do to nature, we do to ourselves. This is the mission of Researchers Trust, that we are nature. No separation between humans and nature. And therefore, taking care of nature, looking after nature, and maintaining the integrity of nature is our first and foremost responsibility and duty. If we just take care of money, profit, production, consumption, the economy, and forget nature, then nature is, as you said, Sweta, nature is the greatest stakeholder in our business. If there's no natural resources, then all our business, all our banking, all our finance, all our capital, all our industry cannot run. Therefore, the real stakeholder, the ultimate stakeholder is nature. Therefore, business, industry, investment, banking, economy, everything must be as a means to maintain the integrity of nature. That is the mission of Researchers Trust.
I think nobody could have said it better than you did, Satish. It's amazing. I completely agree with you. Now the question is, how can we incorporate the most important stakeholder in everything we do? What would be your advice? How can we consider nature as a main stakeholder?
There are two things we need to do. Number one, we have to have a new consciousness in our thinking, our worldview. We must say that nature is not merely a resource for the economy, but nature is a source of life itself. If you turn nature only a resource for making money and profit and business and industry and production and consumption, then nature becomes only a means for an end. That must change. We must say that nature is not only a resource, nature is not just a means to an end, but nature and maintaining nature is the end. And the production, consumption, the economy, the money, the finance, the capital are the means to look after nature. That's the first thing we have to do. Change our thinking, change our consciousness. And the second thing we need to do is to make our economy circular, cyclical. Everything coming from nature must go back to nature without pollution, zero waste and zero pollution and zero carbon emission. If we have a circular economy or a cyclical economy, that is the economy of nature. In nature, everything moves in the cycle. A seed is in the ground, becomes a tree, and tree has leaves, and those leaves fall in the autumn, and that becomes soil again. And that's trees nourish the tree, and the tree brings again the leaves and the fruit and the blossom next year. This is a cyclical economy of nature. We have forgotten the economy of nature, and we think that the economy of linear, take, use, throw away. Take, use, throw away. This linear economy, that has to change. So these are the two things we have to do simultaneously. First, we change our worldview, our thinking, that nature is merely a resource. And then we say that nature is a source of life itself. And the second, we say that we create everything which moves in cycle, in circular way, so that no waste, no pollution, and no carbon emission, and then the abundance of nature we can enjoy. Good life we can have. There's no shortage of anything. Mahatma Gandhi said that there's enough in the world. Nature provides everything, abundance in the world for everybody's need. We can have a good food, good clothes, good house, good water, good everything. We can have wonderful, abundant life without waste and without pollution. So that is the thing we have to do. We have to change our economic system from linear to circular.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And what is your take on the corporate world's free trade?
The corporate world has many good things. Corporate world has provided good living standard. Corporate world has provided good technology. And we, for example, we are able to speak on this cameras and on the screen on our computers because the corporations like Apple and Microsoft and many other corporations have produced some good technology. So we should appreciate what good thing corporations have done. But while they have done good things, they have followed a kind of economy which is linear. And therefore, they have not been mindful of eliminating the waste and pollution and carbon emission. So this is what corporations need to do. And not only that, corporations not only have seen nature as a resource for the economy, corporations also treat humans badly. They see humans are also a resource for the economy. In every corporation, big corporations and small corporations, you have something called HR. Yeah. HR stands for human resources. This is a dreadful word. Humans are not a resource. There's a dignity of human life. You cannot treat humans as a cost in your business and eliminate humans and make more and more use of machine and no use of humans. And you can hire and fire, and you can make people redundant when you don't need them. So we corporations have to learn to respect the dignity of human life and not treat humans as a resource. Therefore, I advise corporations to say that HR should not stand for human resources, but HR should stand for human relationship. So HR, human relationship, HR, not human resources. That is what corporations need to do. If they can do that, then I think corporations have a place in the world, and they can help humanity to bring together, to have a good life and a good technology. All those things are very good, but the way they treat nature and the way they treat humans is very, very questionable. So I challenge our corporations to rise to the challenge and say, we will treat nature with love and respect. We will treat humans with dignity. And then all our business and our banking and our profit and our production and consumption are all fine. There's no problem. If your economy is circular, you can have abundant life. But without waste, without pollution, without undervaluing the human dignity, and without underrating the nature's integrity.
Right. I think what we are trying to say here also that people want to be happy, right? So happiness can come when the environment is clean, when someone is treated well, right? Family is there, the abundance is there. Then everyone wants to be happy at the end. And we know that you are actually of the advisory board, a member of the advisory board in Gross National Happiness Center of Bhutan. Could you tell us what is this index about and how can people be more happy?
Yes. You know, once the king of Bhutan was in New York, and one of the journalists, maybe it was from New York Times, asked the king of Bhutan, what is the gross national product, GNP, or gross domestic product, GDP, of Bhutan? And you know what answer the king gave? He said, we are not interested just in GDP or GNP. We are interested in GNH, gross national happiness. That was a radical answer. And ever since, Bhutan is one small country, but making a big contribution in the consciousness and in the evolution of our ideas. And they are saying that our focus should shift from economic growth to growth in well-being, growth in happiness. If you have lots of money, you have a lot of industry, you have roads and airports and seaports and railways and motorways and have high-rise buildings and a lot of shopping malls, but people are not happy. What's the point of all that? So our focus should be not just economic growth, but growth in human well-being and well-being of planet Earth, planetary well-being and human well-being. That is the aim and the mission of the gross national happiness in Bhutan. And I'm honored and I'm delighted to be a member of the advisory board of the Center for Gross National Happiness in Bhutan. And I have traveled to Bhutan many times to speak there and to participate. And we collaborate with them with Schumacher College, which I founded. And therefore, Bhutan, a small country, is setting a great example that happiness comes first before our sort of growth for the sake of growth. So we need to learn from Bhutan.
Exactly. And why do you think that humans take so much from nature without considering its impact or its cycles? What is your opinion?
You know,
on this?
The word impact is a very nice word, but it is a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
You can have a negative impact or a positive impact. So what we need to do is to invest our money and invest our energy, invest our resources, particularly human mind, human talent, human imagination, human creativity. These are real wealth, you know. Wealth is not only dollars and pounds and euros and yens and rubles and all that kind of money. The real wealth is human imagination, human creativity, human skills. Our two hands can build a house. Our two hands can build technology. Our two hands and our imagination and our skills. So that is the most important part of the impact. So impact investment should be positive impact. What will be the impact of my investment, my activity on human well-being and planetary well-being? So this is the impact investment I believe in. And I congratulate you for providing this concept to all your audience, that our impact investment should be positive on nature and positive on people rather than pollution, waste, exploitation, and human denigration and kind of undervaluing human dignity. So your work of impact investment is a very good work. I admire it.
Thank you so much for such good words, Satish. We truly appreciate it from you, you know, and I want to congratulate you to have so much energy. Rarely our guests have so much energy as you do. I hope you will share some secrets of how to keep the energy so high to our audience. So what do you do as a person?
And I do two things. One is, like we make positive impact through our investment, we also need to have positive thinking. And also we need to be close to nature. So I walk every day in nature. I garden. I be out. I have 2 acres of land around my house. So being in nature gives you energy. If we are all the time indoor and kind of shut in our house and shut in front of a computer all the time, and we are not out in nature, that will not give you energy. So I am age 85. Actually, next month I'll be 86. And yet, I have energy because I go out in nature. So nature is a source of energy. Then I also don't worry about the world. I live a simple life, and I've been married for more than 50 years, and I have a very good, wonderful family life. I have 2 children. And so I don't worry about the world. I do my best to help others, and I do my best to look after my family and my friends and my neighbors, and I do something good for the world all the time, but without any expectation. Expectation brings disappointment. So I have no expectation. I just give, serve, and receive from the world with gratitude. Thank you. My most beloved word and my most favorite word is thank you. I'm grateful for my beautiful air, beautiful sunshine, beautiful rain, beautiful food my soil gives me, and my family, my friends, humanity, my culture, which I have received from my ancestor, the language, the philosophy, the science, the technology. How much we have received from our ancestors. If we are grateful to them and we are humble in our heart and we practice humility, then I think we can be in good health and good energy. If we worry, expectations, and more expectations, and disappointment, and that kind of anger and fear, that doesn't give you energy. So drop your fear, drop your anger, drop your expectations, and have a gratitude in your heart, and you will have a lot of energy.
That's so wise, and we not only, like, it's not a philosophy, it's a living practical advice. We can really feel it and see it. Thanks for sharing with us, Satish. I'd like to ask you also about your magazine, Resurgence and Ecologist magazine. Tell us more a little bit about it. What are you trying to achieve with that?
Resurgence and Ecologist magazines were two magazines. Resurgence magazine was established in 1966. And Ecologist magazine was started in 1970. And then about 10 years ago, we brought these two magazines together. So Resurgence is a magazine which brings spiritual qualities, artistic qualities, and more imaginative qualities. And Ecologist brings more economics and a social and a political and environmental values. And so those are the two sides of the same coin. So we say that, like soil, soul, society, we say that politics, economics, technology, science, all these are important and we should use them. But those cannot be sufficient without our spiritual values and human values and ecological values. So values come from Resurgence, so to speak, and a more practical things come from the Ecologist. So these two magazines have come together and we have 6,000 members and we are looking for more members. So any of listeners want to look and find, they can go to resurgence.org website or the ecologist.org website and they can find more. And so you can become a member and then you will receive the magazine 6 times a year, free of charge, because your membership will pay for the magazine. And it's a beautiful magazine with lots of full color images and photos and artwork and articles about ecology, spirituality, crafts, arts, environment, climate change, global warming, impact investment, a cyclical economy, and all those things which I have talked about, they're all in Resurgence magazine, Resurgence Ecologist magazine. Please look up our website and find out.
Okay. Wow, that we will certainly do. I think we will also
become a member.
We will immediately become a member.
Definitely got one or two members.
Yes. Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you. That'll be wonderful.
And your vision of the world of the future sounds like an utopia. So, what is your personal opinion? Is it achievable?
You know, my worldview is not a utopia. It is a very realistic worldview because majority of people in the world are living a good life. Farmers are producing food for humanity. Mothers are looking after children with love. Teachers are teaching young people with love and care and compassion. And craftsmen and artists are producing good work. And the architects are building good houses. So majority of people are living in peace. I mean, you mentioned Ukraine war and various conflicts. They are a small amount. They are a minority. If you look at the 8 billion people upon this planet Earth, how many people are engaged in war? A few 100,000 maybe, or 10,000, or small number. So what I'm saying, not utopia, that's the real world. But the ruling world of politics and economics is somehow the... So conditioned to think that only way of progress and development is to exploit nature and exploit humans. And that, I think, has to change. So it's a kind of on the top, on the ruling class or the ruling powers are living a very unrealistic lifestyle. And they are imposing economic system and political system, which is exploitative of nature and exploitative of people. But majority of people are living with love, compassion, kindness, generosity, ecology. They look after nature, they plant trees, they don't cut down forests. Forests are being cut down in Amazon and in Brazil and so on. But lots of people, millions of people are planting trees and millions of people are looking after the land and the animals. So I think majority of people in the world are really living good life and loving, caring, and sharing, and compassionate life. But our system has to change. And our system has to incorporate this majority view and not impose this minority view of exploitation and the destruction of nature and destruction of human relationship.
Right. I'm sure you know that climate change awareness is important to take action. But many people, and especially young people, have developed some kind of climate anxiety because they don't know if they can change it at all, if they have a future, right? So what do you think can be done to prevent this and to inspire the youth?
Yes, you are absolutely right, Sweta. The young people are really the hope for the future. When I see somebody like Greta Thunberg, and hundreds of thousands of other young girls and boys around the world from schools and universities are raising their voice and saying that this is not the kind of future we want, where global warming and climate change and a climate catastrophe can destroy our future. And so young people are rising to the challenge, and therefore they give me a great hope. I am an optimist because I'm also an activist. And to be an activist, you have to be an optimist. If you are a pessimist, you can't be an activist. And therefore, having hope, having optimism, and doing something for the betterment of the humanity and of nature is our responsibility, and particularly young people. So I admire young people, I congratulate young people, and I support young people for what they are doing. And I have recently published a book, Small World, Big Ideas. And in that, I have included Greta Thunberg's article in the book. So young people, as you mentioned, Sweta, that are the hope for the future. And we older generation should admire them, support them, encourage them, and listen to them. And we must not think the young people have no wisdom, and young people have no ideas. They must listen to us. We must listen to young people.
Very, very true. And what is your trust's three main programs?
Say again?
What are the three main programs of your trust, of the Resurgence Trust?
Our three programs are, number one, a bi-monthly magazine, Resurgence Ecologist. And this had been, as I said, since 1966 and 1970, it had been going. So more than 55 years. And the second one is, the Ecologist website. So in this Ecologist website, it's a free service. You don't have to be even a member. You can access theecologist.org anybody, anytime. So we have a few million people every year, particularly young people, because young people can't always afford, or they don't have time to read magazines. So we provide this website, the Ecologist website, free of charge, particularly young people visit our website. So that's a second. And the third is that we organize annual events, annual festival of well-being. And this year we are going to have Lord Stern speaking, Muhammad Yunus from Bangladesh speaking, and many. Last year we had Russell Brand and Annie Lennox and many other people speaking. So every year we have a annual festival of well-being, where we say shift your focus from economic growth to growth in well-being. That's our annual event. But also every month we have Resurgence talks, and we invite great intellectuals and writers and poets and economists and environmentalists and thinkers to speak every month, every last Wednesday of every month. And even today, tonight, I am, I don't know how to connection I can give you, but if you look at Resurgence events, you go to website of Resurgence events, there's a tonight, I and another person, we are speaking. So we have, that's a third program. So a written word with the magazine, digital word through our website of the Ecologist, and a spoken word with our events and monthly talks and annual event. So there's three way: written word, digital word, and spoken word. We promote the ideas which I have been talking to you all this afternoon.
Satish, and in which countries are you operating with your events? Is it in England?
This is a global event. because we run it on online. Our annual festival of well-being is online. So people from all around the world, from New Zealand, Australia, Africa, Asia, China, Russia, India, Europe, everywhere people come. And also monthly talks are online. So people come from all over the world. So it's a global audience. And we are based in UK, in Devon. And so we have a resurgence center. We have our own building. We have some garden and we have our own place. But our programs are open to whole global audience. But also we have some in-person audience as well. And so people come to our resurgence center and have a small audience of 100 or 200 people anytime. But these monthly talks and annual event are global because they are online.
And are you looking for donors, donations, or investors to support your amazing work which you are doing?
Yes, Resurgence Trust is a charity. And therefore, we are not operating as a business. We are more a not-for-profit, like an NGO, not-for-profit magazine, and a trust, and a charity. And so we are looking more for philanthropic contributions and donations. So if you are, any one of your audience listening to me, are interested to support Resurgence Trust, then we will be delighted to hear from you. And you can always connect with resurgence.org is our website. And you can write to me, satish@resurgence.org, and I can reply or give you answer. So yes, we are looking for donations and grants from charities, individual donations and so on. Because we are a charity, we are in the service of humanity, in the service of planet Earth, and we are devoted to good causes to stem global warming, create social justice, and create more social harmony and all the well-being. All these issues are very, very important and they need promoting. And therefore, we need financial support. So thank you for asking that question.
You're welcome. And do you have expansion plans? And if yes, what are those?
Our expansion plan is that we would like to increase our membership. At the moment, we have 6,000 members. But that's, in a way, quite a small number. We would like to get maybe 10,000 members or even more. So that is one thing we would like to expand. And then our audience at the moment, a global audience, but we get maybe 500,000 people listening to us for an event. We would like to have even more. So we are all the time trying to reach out and sort of increase our outreach.
Are you using also Sustainable Development Goals of United Nations as your framework and measuring the impact that you are creating?
Yes, yes. I mean, you know, we work with United Nations. I work with UNESCO and UNEP and UNDP and various other arms of the United Nations. And I think United Nations is a very admirable organization. But our work is mainly at the grassroots level, because all big changes happen from the bottom up. If you take all the great movements like Mahatma Gandhi, he did not come from the center, or Martin Luther King did not come from the White House, or Nelson Mandela did not come from the center. All these great movements start on the fringe. And change comes from the kind of, you can say, from the fringe. And so grassroots movement, building from the grassroots and then going upwards. Of course, we can also bring change from the top down. But top down change is more slow and more difficult. But the people are more inclined to be generous, be kind, help each other and commit themselves to greater ideals and values, what Ben, you call utopia. But the ordinary people can embrace good values. So we always try to work at the grassroots level. And then top will change once the people have changed. And the people will vote for good people in the government. So our main work is to change the consciousness and change the heart and change the mind and change the thinking of ordinary people. So working with people at a people's level, at a grassroots level. Of course, I think it'll be very difficult to change people like Biden and Putin and Modi and Xi Jinping and all the kind of great leaders. They are stuck in their system, and they have to maintain that system. But people are more free. So at the grassroots level, you can create new organizations, new projects, new schools, new ways of farming, new ways of working. So people's movement is my aim. Building from bottom up, people's movement. People power is a real power. The superpower is not United States of America. Superpower is not Russia. Superpower is not China. Superpower is people's power. Public opinion. If a public opinion in our favor for climate change, for protection of the environment, for social justice, if people believe in it, then people power will have more energy and more impact than the superpower. So for me, superpower is people power.
Wow. I just always can say at the end, when you finish talking, wow. So, well, the next question, could you please share with us a little bit about the Schumacher Academy, which you have founded? How is
yes.
it connected?
Yeah. That is my second project. A Resurgence Trust is one. And the Schumacher College started, I established 30 years ago. And that is because at the moment, Sweta and Ben, our young people go to schools and universities, and they are looked down. The teachers and the university system look at young people and they think that young people have no body. They have no body, they have no hands, they have no heart, and they have just brain, half brain. And that half brain is trained and educated. And that is not good. So what we have created through Schumacher College is to bring a whole person education, education of head, education of heart, and education of hands. So we also teach our people how to grow food, how to build a house, how to cook, how to mend things, so that our hand skills are cultivated. Also at Schumacher College, we learn from nature. At the universities and schools, you learn about nature. You learn how to exploit nature, how to control nature, how to dominate nature. We said that is not our purpose. We want to teach learning from nature and living in harmony with nature and going with the grain of nature. So nature-centered education is the mission of Schumacher College. Earth-centered education, not human-centered, not brain-centered, not technology-centered, but nature-centered. And then technology, human brain, and academic learning, science, and mathematics, history, geography, anthropology, all these subjects are fine. Academic subjects are all very good, but they're only brain, only head. And we want to bring heart and hands together. So Schumacher College is a kind of nature-centered education, earth-centered education, education of head, education of heart, education of hands, learning by doing, learning from nature. That is the mission of Schumacher College.
When I checked the website of the college, it gave me a wish to go and study again, you know.
Yes, you are welcome. At Schumacher College, we have short courses, but we also have a long courses. You can come for 1 year, but also you can come for 1 week. And so it's very flexible. So you can look at our Schumacher College program and you can come for 1 week or 2 weeks or 6 months or 1 year. It's very flexible.
And how did you come to the name Schumacher?
Name E.F. Schumacher, he was an economist and he wrote a very wonderful, famous book called Small is Beautiful. Economics as if people and planet matter, not just profit matter. So Small is Beautiful. And in this book, there's a chapter called Buddhist Economics. E.F. Schumacher was the first Western economist to put Buddhism and economics together. People asked him, what Buddhism has to do with economics? And Schumacher always say that economics without spiritual values, ecological values, social values, human values, is like a well without water, like a soil without water, like a flower without fragrance and color. So you need human values, ecological values, spiritual values, Buddhist values in the economics, so that economics has a kind of inner quality as well as the outer quality. The inner and outer go together. Outer transformation, social organization, political organization, industrial organization can only be successful if also there's a human heart in it. And human heart is brought by Buddhist or natural or ecological values. And therefore, Buddhist economics was his name, famous and outstanding essay in the book, Small is Beautiful. So we were very inspired by that. And I was a good friend of E.F. Schumacher before he died. And therefore, when he died, we said we should honor this great economist, and we should bring this good economics, economics as if people and planet matter. And that is the economics I talked about when we say cyclical economy, circular economy, economy of nature, economy as if people and planet matter. So that is why E.F. Schumacher, Small is Beautiful, is our great inspiration.
Wow. And what can our audience do for you?
First of all, I would like my audience or your audience to look up my books and also the magazine Resurgence and come to Schumacher College. But more important, all those things are help to us as well. But more important is be the change that you want to see in the world. Because that's where everything begins. Everything begins with myself. Everything begins with yourself. We cannot expect other people to change before without changing ourselves. And therefore, what the audience can do is to start with yourself. Be the change that you want to see in the world. And the secondly, your audience can do is to learn to communicate these ideas. You know, the industry and business are very good in communicating and spreading the word. Look at Coca-Cola, how efficient they are. In every villages in Africa and India and Asia, you can get Coca-Cola. And they are very good in advertising, very good in communicating. We, the ecologically minded, nature-centered people who are environmentalists and who are social justice advocates, we don't know how to communicate our ideas in such a broad way that everybody can understand them. And therefore, the audience can do something. They need to learn to communicate through poetry, through music, through art, through words, through writing books, through speaking. In every way, we need to communicate. That's the second thing your audience and our audience can do. The third thing you can do is don't just think, how can we change the world? How can we have a better world? Just thinking is not enough. Be the change, communicate the change, but also join other people. Join any organization like Greta Thunberg, Fridays for the Future. Now people are joining her movement. So whatever movement appeals to you, Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, or any other organizations, WWF, any other organization, join together. All great movements are made when hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people join together. This is how Martin Luther King's movement, Nelson Mandela's movement, Martin Luther King's movement, Vaclav Havel's movement, and Simone de Beauvoir's movement for women's liberation started. Bengali Mathai started planting trees. So join other people. All our work is co-creation. All our thriving is mutual, together. No one person can do anything. Even Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela, one person cannot do anything. They have to be joined by other people together. Like a great river is made of many, many small, small tributaries. In the same way, a great movement of change and transformation is made of many, many, many individuals. And therefore, your audience can do that. Be the change, communicate the change, and join the change, and the change will happen. And do it all with love in your heart. No anger, no fear, no animosity. Do everything with love, but act and act and act. Action is your prerogative. Don't just sit back and criticize the world and curse the world and say everything is bad, business is bad, government is bad, industry is bad, everybody is bad. That's no good. Just saying bad, bad, bad is no good. Do something about it. Do something good, positive, positive impact, and then world will change. That's what your audience can do.
I don't know what to say.
Exactly. Well, I have this crazy idea. Why don't we contact Coca-Cola and put your magazine or website on every bottle so people can find you, so you can spread your message around the globe? Maybe you should try it out to collaborate with corporations like that.
Yes, we have to do it. Yes, yes, absolutely.
Satish, the time is running really quickly with you. It's incredible. Such conversations just pass as 1 minute, right? But we wanted to ask you very last call to action, even though before it sounded like call to action, but maybe a short one. What would you like to say to as a call to action to our global audience as well?
What I would like to say to the audience is that everything comes when love is in your heart. So love of nature, love of people, love of planet, love of good work, love of art, craft, culture, love of values, love of yourself. You have to love yourself. There's no good hoping that I will love others without loving yourself. So I would like all of us to start with ourselves, love ourselves, then love nature, love our planet, beautiful earth, love our children, and love our work, and do everything with love. Love is the answer. What is your question?
Thank you so much, Satish, for joining us today and sharing all your wisdom and action-oriented advices to everyone. It's really inspiring and gives hope, I think, for those who are struggling at this moment, wherever they are.
It has been my pleasure to talk with you, and thank you for having me on your program.
No, we would love to have you back again, because you had so much things to say. 1 hour is not enough. So as you are aware that thank you to our guests, you will receive an honorary membership of the Chamomile platform and also the Impact Leader Certificate. So just register it. We will support you with it and we will upgrade it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we hope to see you live in Zurich or
in October. Yeah.
In October, yes.
Bye for now.
Bye, Sophie.
Thank you.
Well, I think I have nothing to say today any longer, just that with this, the episode 8 of season 5 is finishing. And remember to subscribe on our YouTube channel, not to miss any wise advice, how to live your life, how to run your business, what to do, how to be in harmony with the nature and with yourself. So youtube.com/SwissImpact.
And we invite all impactful businesses who are seeking investment or support to our TV show so that they can receive the support they are looking for.
Right. And remember, you got more when you give back.
So always invest with impact. Bye for now.
Bye-bye. And
Hi.
Love yourself.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of TV show, Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Make sure you check out the next one and also find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Spotify, podcasts, and any of your favorite social media places.
And please subscribe to our channel so you know when we release new episodes.
And also leave us some feedback to help us grow this awesome impact community and join it.
We look forward to sharing the next episodes with you. And until then, you get more when you give back.
So always invest with impact.